Welcome to The Brains Behind It, the official podcast of BrainHackers.com. The source for smart strategies to improve your life, one brain hack at a time. In this podcast, we talk to the leaders and innovators behind great organizations and find out the secret to their success. Here's your host, editor-in-chief of BrainHackers.com, and two-time Guinness record holder for memory, Dave Farrow.
Hey there, Brain Hackers. Dave Farrow here with another Brains Behind It. I'm talking to Tom Scarda. He is an author. He's also essentially a franchise expert. And he bills himself as a person who's just an ordinary guy that helps ordinary people, kind of get to that next level. So we're going to talk about it. We've heard a lot about getting to the next level and all that. But we're going to have a nice discussion about being an author, about franchises, about marketing. Stay tuned. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, Dave, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Okay, so I want to jump right into talking about franchises. What's, the biggest misunderstanding people have about franchises that is kind of a pet peeve of yours?
Like, where do I even begin? There's so many misunderstandings about franchises. One is that, you know, people feel like you need $1 million to start a franchise, and you totally do not. It's very affordable for the average guy like me. And you don't need to be in a fast food thing.
So when you say start a franchise, I know you do kind of both sides where you are you talking about a person buying a franchise, or are you talking about, say, someone runs a business and they start to franchise that business? That's kind of the two different, the business side of it.
Yeah, and I can help people in both sides. But really what I focus on is helping people kind of get out of their comfort zone and buy a franchise. So, you know, take their destiny into their own hands and jump into something and build it something greater than they could do in a job.
Now, how many people do you think you've helped buy a franchise or consulted or something like that?
It's funny you ask that question. 944 as of
last. Oh, yeah, you have an exact number, yeah. Not including maybe somebody who read your book and didn't give you credit for it, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, I'm talking about everyone that I really talked to and helped figure out, because, you know, 40% of the people I talk to, I tell, don't go into business, don't go into franchising, because it's not for you. You know, it's really not for everyone.
So what is, I always thought the franchising, you know, a franchise guy would tell you that everybody should go into franchising, because as far as, I tell everybody they should start a business. Everybody, I believe, on the planet should run a business at some point in their life, just so they have that experience. Even if they're going to be an employee, they should know how a business works. They should have an idea so they can be a better employee and they can, you know, rise up the ladder and all. But you're saying that I would think franchises, the whole idea of a franchise is that it's much more, it's a safer bet than just a startup. So you're saying that even with that safe bet, almost half of the people you suggest don't do it.
Well, I think that, a franchise is a business with training wheels, and that's kind of what I needed, because I was a Subway conductor.
You were a subway conductor.
Yeah, I opened closed doors on the New York City subway. That was my first real job growing up.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah, I was there for 13 years. And then one day, an old-timer said to me, "Hey, kid, this is a great job because you'll always have a shirt on your back. You know, it's really safe." He said, "You'll never have a silk shirt, but you'll always have a shirt."
Oh. And I was like,
wow, that sounds like mediocrity to me.
Yeah.
And that was the moment I decided I'm going to be a business owner, because business owners were wearing the shirts that I liked, you know.
Right. So you see these people going to work every single day and you see like a slice of life and you start to think, hey, I want to be like that guy.
Right. You know, I don't want to be the 9 to 5 saying, I get 2 weeks of vacation. I can only do this. I can only do that. And I grew up in a very blue-collar family. My dad was a New York City police officer, and I wanted to do something really, really different, and I realized that business owners were living the kind of lifestyle I wanted to live.
Eventually, right? And usually in the beginning, they got to pay their dues and living the lifestyle nobody wants to live, where you're working 80 hours a week and not getting much for it. But you saw that there was a trend. Maybe people are doing better over time.
There's an upside. I mean, there's definitely, you're going to take your hits. You're going to work your butt off. I never worked so hard in my life, but it was my baby. I loved it, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And so That's the most important thing. But a franchise is a business with training wheels, and you could plug into that thing and you could run it. But when I talk to people and I consult with people that are looking to buy a franchise, I often hear like negative phrases, negative self-talk. I don't want to call somebody out on it per se, but if you're the kind of person that feels like, you know, hey, I could make $20 an hour, why should I, you know, invest $50,000? Well, if you're counting pennies, you know,
if you have that wage mentality of how much I make per hour, then you're not in the mindset of being an entrepreneur. You know, it's interesting that you're getting this, because a lot of people think of the type of people who are looking at a franchise. These are the big shots. These are the people who have invested and they're, you know, they've run a business before maybe or something. And you're saying that these are ordinary people who are looking at either a franchise or they're going to go work at a store somewhere.
Right. It falls into really three different types of people. You know, one is somebody just gets laid off and they realize, hey, you know, I don't want to go back to the corporate rat race, or for a lot of people, they're aged out. And if they're 50 years old, they can't get a job. Nobody's really talking about that. But the average age of somebody buying a franchise went from 42 years old before the Great Recession to 56 years old.
Really?
At the height of the recession. 2011.
So it's the retirement policy for a lot of people then.
It turned into that by default, which is not really the best way to get into it. But there is that person. And then for other people like me, you wake up one day and you realize, hey, I don't want to work for this guy anymore. I want to run my own thing. And so you start looking around, and then hopefully you'll find franchising, which is really, like I said, they hold your hand. They help you be successful. Everything that you need to know, because the more successful you are, the more successful they are. So it behooves them to really help you do well. And then a lot of other people I work with, they have a good gig going, whether it's a business or a job, but they want to diversify. And so they invest in a passive type franchise. And there's a handful of those. There aren't many, to be honest.
So these are people who are not expecting to work the franchise. They're expecting to hire somebody, and maybe it'll be an investment and they'll just make a trickle of an income from it.
Absolutely. If you could delegate and you could have a manager in place, you're not afraid to do that, and you got some money to invest, then you know, that's something to talk about.
No, you know, actually, I can relate to that. Actually, the second one there, because the last one there, because for me, it was real estate. I bought a bunch of houses and I'm renting them out, so it's passive income, and the houses also build value over time, and I can chart it out and everything, and I could conceivably, I'm not going to, but I could even conceivably retire, you know, and just live off of that.
No question about it. And that's kind of the American dream.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So you and I have something in common. We both worked at a Subway, but mine was the sandwich artist type. It was almost the last job that I've ever had, you know, and I started my business. I got sick of that sort of stuff, you know, and I did do a lot of sales and marketing for other people, but it was on commission. So that was what started me being self-employed, because it was all on my shoulders. If I didn't make anything, I didn't make anything, you know. But that was one of the last hourly jobs I ever had, and it's kind of funny, you know. So would you like a cold cut combo or what? That's going back. Yeah, so a fellow Subway person there. I haven't thought back to that in ages. But yeah, definitely there's this arc. You have this book, and why did you write the book? Was this to kind of get the word out about franchises a bit more?
Well, the very first book I wrote is called The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty, which is how to manage change, embrace fear, and live a fulfilled life. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that because so many people I talk to go down the road of buying a franchise and then get cold feet, and they choose unhappiness instead of uncertainty. But uncertainty is where the magic happens. And so that was the first book. And then I wrote Franchise Savvy, which became an Amazon bestseller and all that good stuff. And it helps people understand franchising through my stories. I've owned franchises, really, really did successful franchise ventures, And I've also been involved with one and failed and lost almost my whole life savings.
Wow.
And that's what made me a franchise expert, believe it or not. So it's that kind of stuff that I talk about.
Failure leads to a lot of experts out there. There's a lot of people who are experts because they've failed and taken their knocks, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, you're going through it and you're cursing it. But now as I look back on it, it's a blessing. I'm grateful that it happened because now I can really help a lot of people, you know, with credibility say, you know what, I've done it. You know, let me show you the path because, you know, it could be difficult.
And it is absolutely fascinating. Looking back, I've had the same feeling. When I was in the grind, I had all sorts of regrets. Now that I'm through the grind and enjoying some of it, I look back, I wouldn't change a thing. You know, if anything, I would double down on the tough times, you know, because I needed more of them before it, like, you know, slapped me upside the head and made me, you know, get some smarts in me and you know, work a little harder or do the right thing. So, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so I find it fascinating that, you know, you're a franchise expert, you help people with franchising, and then essentially you made this book that could be listed as kind of a motivational book, you know, and I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs are in the same boat where as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, you have to wear so many hats. It really gives you a feeling of the human condition. You know, I mean, I remember talking philosophy with one person for ages and they're a used car salesman for a living, right? You'd think they were a professor in university. They're talking about being stoic. They're talking about the human condition and nihilism and Nietzsche and all these different things and existentialism and everything. And it's like, oh no, I got all these insights because I'm trying to sell people a vehicle, you know? And you see all the people who came on the lot, they were all different walks of life. You see the different arcs, you see the challenges and you're also facing your own challenges of trying to make a living as well. And it's all on your shoulders. And do you think that there's some wisdom in being out in the wild instead of in the zoo? Like it's all on your shoulders. And if you fall down, there's no one there to pick you up rather than, you know, having a Joe job. Do you think there's some wisdom you can't help but gather?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's the best thing you could do. I think it's better than any kind of college program you could go through. I think it's really, you know, you have to learn it yourself. You there's a cunning that you have when you're out there, you know, and you have to, you could only eat what you kill, which is, you know, like a sales job or if you're running your own business. So you learn skills and you gain muscle that you never thought you even had. But you need to exercise it. So I think it's some of the best things you could do. And you know, and I tell everybody, it's the toughest thing you'll ever do. Even with a franchise where you have a lot of help, you have a blueprint. There's just stuff that comes out of the blue. You just don't know what's going to happen. But it's the best experience that I think you can ever have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So speaking of experiences, I love asking this question. What is the most difficult experience or tragedy that you've ever had? I assume the one where you nearly went bankrupt. But what did you specifically learn from that event? Or if it's another one, let me know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that as you say that, that is probably the heaviest thing for me was, you know, doing well. Because the first franchise I had, I sold only 5 years into it at 41 years old and I semi-retired.
Great job.
So I'm like, wow, this is like awesome, right? And I'm a hot shot and I'm full of myself and I buy a
second. You can do no wrong, right?
Right? Like I'm Midas, man. Everything I touch goes to gold. And then I all of a sudden it's very humbling.
Yeah. And
in that you realize that it seems like the end of the world, but then all of a sudden things start to clear up. And it's the toughest position to be in and it's tough to think positive when the world is caving in on you. But when you do and you see it through to the other side, that's where the magic happens and events happen and people come in your path. And all of a sudden, slowly but surely, you know, I'm you know, for me personally, I ended up doing even better than I was doing when I thought I was doing well. But you had to hit that valley. When you hit that valley, there's nothing but lessons on the way up. And then if you could look at it and say, I need to get through this in order to help other people, it's kind of like Viktor Frankl, if you ever read the book, Man's Search for Meaning, spent all this time in Nazi concentration camps.
Yeah.
I remember reading that book 25 years ago, and I felt like maybe even longer than that. And I felt like, wow, man, if this guy could, you know, I reminded myself, if this guy could get through a concentration camp because he knew on the other side he needed to tell the story, that's all I needed to remember, and that's what got me through.
Wow, that's fantastic. It's a very inspirational book. It's fantastic. And it's amazing where there's a handful of books and ideas that people share that have made a big difference, and I've never found people who, you know, share names of books more than other entrepreneurs. Has been crazy. It might be my bias there, but I find it time and time again. And that book also comes up again and again in these interviews. Okay. So let's go to kind of a brighter note. A lot of people ask about the first meal of the day or the first thing you do in the morning. What is your morning ritual?
First thing I do is I get up in the morning and I get myself a beer. No, I'm kidding. That's
a nice day. I like that. Yeah.
No, I get up and I have a very solid routine of I try not to eat anything before 12 noon. And it's kind of a ketogenic thing. I'll drink coffee, don't get me wrong. But I try to drink 16 ounces of water in the first probably 10 minutes that I'm up.
Really?
Yep. Get hydrated, and then I journal for probably a good 30 or 40 minutes. And some meditation, and try vehemently not to touch my phone or email or anything until, you know, true business hours. I work for myself. I work from home. I don't have to get up and, you know, and punch a clock, but I set my alarm for 6 a.m. And typically I get up really before the alarm anyway. If I can, like this morning, I'll do a little walk or treadmill, depending on what the weather is. Get that blood flowing, and that's typically the way I start up.
Oh, cool! Yeah, so starting with a little exercise. I do the same myself. I actually fast in the morning, so it's kind of ironic. I asked the breakfast question. What is the greatest marketing hook you've ever heard of or thought of for your business or any of the franchises you've been involved in?
You know, a great marketing hook they're very hard to come by, right? So. I think a lot of people get confused because they feel like they have to reach the masses, but you really need to, you know, reach the niche. Mm. As one of my mentors said to me, the niche makes you rich.
Yeah.
So you want to focus on that. And a marketing hook is really, I'm trying to think, the best one for me is, you know, what's really worked for me is getting a lot of PR through the fact that the average age of somebody buying a franchise is 56 years old.
Okay, so you've done a PR blast with that, and then, you know, people, then that's a really good PR hook, actually. Yeah, we've found that the demographics work really well. If you have a pitch for an author, let's say, or something, and you limit the demographic to, say, millennials or 50 plus or women or something like that, then it does kind of skyrocket. And the interesting thing is, it's not all just It is that you're targeting a niche, but it's also that these media outlets are looking for people from that niche. They want to reach more people who are 50 plus, so they'll bring you on to talk about it. So in the hopes that that content will appeal to that demographic that is perhaps underserved on their platform.
Right, right. And like you started out with, I like to talk about busting myths a lot.
Mm.
Usually, you know, writers or radio producers eat that up. So I like to do that.
Do you do your own PR a lot? Do you book a lot of these things, or you work with people?
I do it all myself.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
I'm always in the market to try to find somebody, you know, better like you that knows what they're doing.
Hey, man, we can definitely talk. Absolutely. Yeah. I have an open invitation for people who are qualified. And qualified means that you got the heart and you got the passion. And I give a half hour of my time to people who are coming. And I you know, bill that time at usually like, you know, $250-$300 an hour, typically for consulting. But I always think that there's a lot of people starting out. And I got to tell you, personally, I had to do that for business reasons, you know, and of course offering like that free consultation is great, but I got to tell you, it's been personally rewarding because there's been a bunch of people who have startups, even a couple who had franchises that asked me for kind of a strategy session. They really picked my brain, really challenged me during that time. And I knew that they couldn't afford my services at all. You know, they were just starting out. But I knew that I made an impact in their lives, you know, and I wonder, hey, maybe I'm going to talk to them 5 years down the road and, you know, they'll be the biggest client I have. Who knows?
Hey, what goes around comes around, man. That's my biggest, you know, always keep that in the back of my mind.
So. Absolutely. So, okay. So yeah, what we can talk about, we can keep the conversation going afterwards, but, for the people, watching and listening, give them an idea of what you would suggest, as an author, what is your, you know, top few tips, to be a successful author. And I mean, successful as in, you know, you sell a bunch of books, you know, you get listed high in Amazon. There are some people who are doing kind of, you know, tricks with email blasts and timing and everything to get listed high in Amazon. But I do know that your book has sold really well and you picked that niche as well. So what is the secret that people, you know, might not have heard of so far?
I think, you know, you need to find somebody that can actually help you market the book correctly on Amazon, mm-hmm. not worry about the other platforms. I think you really seriously these days need to consider self-publishing, because you have a lot more control. Mm. You can do whatever you need to do with that book. I think that's really, it's more powerful now than it ever has been. And at the end of the day, when you get a publisher, the publisher, like if you have a publisher, you're more likely to get on, you know, the talk or one of the TV shows. But that's about it. They don't do anything else for you. There's a credibility piece, but that's it. You have mm-hmm. to market that book. And
yeah.
you have to be a marketer.
So talk a little bit about how you market that book outside of the PR, because that's actually something that I try to do for our clients is in addition to getting them on shows, I'll do some media training with them and things like that. But there is the other side of it that usually a publicist or a publisher takes care of, where, you know, they want to get, you know, the book in stores or Costco or something, or they want to get, you know, for different marketing campaigns. Some of the ones we've been involved in is like giveaways for charities, and, you know, you can sell 1,000 books at a time sometimes with things like this. So give us some of your ideas for that.
Yeah, I think that it's important to know what your goals are. I mean, if you're writing a book to make a lot of money, chances are you're not going to be successful. So you got to be able to really help people with that book. And if it's mm-hmm. like, you know, if it's like a fiction book or something, you know, if it has a story in it or something, I mean, that's really important. I think, you know, what I'm trying to do as we speak is, I'm in New York, and a lot, it's known that a lot of New Yorkers take what they call mm-hmm. the Hampton Jitney, which is just a really nice coach bus from Manhattan to the Hamptons for the weekend. So I want to get my books in every seat as I get on the bus, you know, things like that. Cause those are the people that apparently have money and they're probably, hating their job and they're trying to get out of New York for the weekend. So it kind of fits nice. So you got to think creatively like that.
Yep. Actually that reminds me of something that, the authors of Chicken Soup for the Soul said that for about a year or two, I think it was, they decided to come up with three different ways a day that they could market their book. I think I'm getting that right. And yeah, one of them was, you know, how do I get it in this limousine and how do I get it in this pocket and things like that. It's little things like that. We have an author who wrote an article recently, Carew Pepwitz. He's the cowboy philosopher. You'd love his book. He would do things to get reviews on Amazon. He's mowed people's lawns. He's done different things, you know, for it. You know, that sort of thing, that hustle.
Yeah. You got to have the hustle. What you need to do is write down all your ideas on a post-it note, put them up on the wall in your office, and then every day take one down and execute that idea. That'll get you focused and keep you going day in and day out.
It's almost like you're saying hard work is what you need to be successful. That's crazy.
Crazy, right? Well, my favorite quote in the world is, when opportunity knocks, hard work answers the door.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's good. It sounds extra powerful coming from you with your accent and everything. You know, this is a New York accent.
Yeah.
I love it.
I got a guy.
There you go. I got a guy. Yeah, you got to do like a, one of those YouTube motivational videos, you know, and say all those quotes. All right. So any final thoughts, any final suggestions for people on marketing or kind of psychology behind this or anything about franchising you want to continue to say?
I got a million things I want to say, but to sum it up, I guess, is really, you know who you are, know what your goals are. Don't be afraid to execute on them, and don't listen to the naysayers. Number one naysayer being that voice in your head that tells you that you can't do it, that you don't deserve it.
Yeah, when you first started this, I'm summing things up, but you know, let's go back to the beginning. When you first started this, your first thing was you were talking about people who are starting a franchise, and then you start talking about mindset almost immediately, where people are getting all negative. And I had no idea that I always thought, you know, starting a franchise was more like an investment choice. Like you'd have the same conversation you have like buying a, you know, getting a 401k or something like that. But you find the biggest thing is mindset, is that people don't think they can succeed because of their own failings.
Yeah. And people get into it, you know, and thinking to themselves, this is probably not going to work for me.
Now, how often do you think that they're right, and how often do you think that they're overly, like, what I'm trying to say is, if you were to place a bet on success, would you bet on the person who has confidence or the person who is insecure and not sure if they're going to succeed? Which one would you go for?
The confidence.
But you yourself also had, you know, hubris. You know, sometimes that confidence can get a bit too much, but at least you learn the lesson from it, I suppose, right?
Right. But if you go in thinking, you know, like Henry Ford said, what you think is, you know, if you think you can or you can't, you're right.
You're right, yeah, you
know? So if you go into it thinking like, oh, this, I don't know, you know, I'm going to give it a shot. I don't know if it's going to work. If you go into it halfway, and then, you know, chances are it's not going to work.
You know, and that's really interesting, because I've always had a very high confidence but low self-esteem, I tell people, whereas I don't really think I'm all that important. I don't, like, I'm not low self-esteem, like I'm depressed, relax, but I don't hold myself in very high esteem. I don't hold myself above anybody else, but I'm very confident. I think I can do anything I set my mind to. And you're right. If you're super confident and the competence is not there, then life will slap you down, and that's perfectly appropriate. But the confident person will also be able to pick themselves back up and go, okay, I'll learn from this, I'll do something. But the unconfident person won't. So in the end of the day, that confidence really is spiritual capital, I guess you could say.
Spiritual capital, that's a good way to say it. Because when you go out there and think like, I can do this, this is going to happen, magical things happen for you. Mm-hmm. Dr. Norman Vincent Peale said, you know, when you go out on a limb, the universe backs you up, God backs you up. And that's really the most important thing that you need to realize. You got to have, you know, for me, people say, how are you successful? Because people had faith. I knew it was going to work. You know, the name of my corporation is Mustard Seed, because the faith of a mustard seed could move mountains.
Move mountains. Nice.
And so that's what I was all about. But, you know, I know we're running out of time. I just wanted to say, because you have such a great show and great following, and you're inspiring people. Anyone who wants a free copy of my book, Franchise Savvy, just send an email to me or to you via your website. I'm just Tom at tomscarta.com. That's S-C-A-R, David A. So Tom Scarta, just free book. Just
awesome. And I want to remind, you know, anybody who's listening or watching, you know, of all the people that come on the show, how many people just jump up and say their email address and offer a free book. You know, if you don't win all the things that you don't, you know, apply for. What's the phrase?
That's right. You don't,
you lose all the races you don't run. That's right, it. Right. Many different ways to look at it.
You don't hit all the balls that you don't swing at, or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Things like that. So, congratulations for swinging. Definitely get his book. I'll be taking a look at it, and it'll be fantastic. Thanks very much for being on the show. You're definitely a brains behind it. And anytime I want to talk about franchising, I'm going to give you a call too.
Yeah, I'm here, man. Thanks, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to The Brains Behind It. And remember to check out brainhackers.com for more. If you have a suggestion for the next interview or comment, please email editor@brainhackers.com. If you want a free 30-minute marketing consultation from Dave Farrow and his team, then email editor@brainhackers.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.